The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
It's only a matter of a few days now before Harina Resources, an Australian domiciled company, reverses into Citius, which is a London Stock Exchange vehicle, bringing with it a rare earths project. Now, here to tell us all about this transaction, what it means and what's in it for investors, it's Joe Belladonna. So, Joe, tell us what's going on with Citius Harina.
Yeah, thanks for having us along, Alistair. So we recently published our prospectus to complete the reverse takeover of Citius Resources, as you mentioned in the introduction. So that process now has been set for a meeting of the shareholders of Citius Resources on the 20th of March. And Harina, or Citius/Harina, Citius will be renamed Harina post that AGM, assuming safe passage of the resolutions, and we'll be up and trading on the London Stock Exchange main market on the 21st of March. So the transaction itself for the reverse takeover is heading towards completion quite soon.
I mean, as far as recent transactions go, this is actually quite a big one. 1.35 million raised. Tell us a bit about how that was put together.
Yeah, so there's a few components to the funding that's come together for the placement and the raise. So at the moment we've got a loan that will be coming into the group of circa £775,000. Then there will be a placement of around £640,000. And then there's also some fee for service shares that will come together at around about £500,000. So it has been pulled together by a multitude of ways. But I guess the reality is that we needed to complete the transaction as quickly as possible and move forward with developing the project. So we think that as we move forward, we'll be able to re-establish the trading of Citius up there on the market and then get that re-rated based on having this large scale ionic clay rare earth resource that we're bringing into the package now as the flagship asset of the group.
So this loan will be fairly short term, I understand, partly because, as you say, you've got a pretty advanced asset there on the ground, which you ought to be able to move along pretty quickly. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so the loan, the genesis of the loan is basically with Harina being an Australian-based company. The loan is coming out of the Australian investors. Part of the reason that it's a loan versus like a share placement is that a lot of the Australian investors that were involved in Harina weren't overly familiar with the London market as such. So this was a way of them remaining connected to the company, bringing money into the company to help fund the project and move forward with the company. And then obviously it will be, it's 2 years, it's unsecured. It will be it'd be something that we would definitely need to deal with in the near term, as far as refinancing or looking at how we convert that into some form of other equity instrument or another sort of loan instrument as such. Because, you know, as an exploration or a developing company, it's not like it will be repaid through revenue. So we're well aware that you know, as we move forward and we get value back into the script, that we will need to be doing something with that loan as we move forward. But it's definitely more to do with the Australian investors wanting to be, you know, maintaining a connection to the group versus, you know, the need to borrow money as such to get the placement done.
I mean, I guess it's worth saying at this point that it's not you guys, it's not the first rodeo for you guys, is it? I mean, you've been in this resources space, you and other members of the team for a while, and you've done a few other things.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say. Look, yeah, the markets are never wrong. When you go out and you speak to people in the markets, they're never wrong with their opinions. And, you know, it hasn't been, you know, the greatest of markets. You know, recently around IPOs, there's been very few IPO transactions globally. It's not just a London or an Australian or a Toronto or an American thing. There's been very few, you know, resources IPOs, that's for sure, over the last few years. But look, Ampass and Dava certainly needs to, you know, be funded and move forward quickly, because it's a you know, people use the word, you know, world class and tier one project quite liberally when they talk about their projects, but we're looking at, you know, one of the largest scale you know, rare earth resources that's been, you know, it is a JORC compliant resource that we've got in the ground at Ampass and Dava. So we needed to move it forward as quickly as we can, because you know, the rare earth markets is quite interesting at the moment. It's getting a lot of news flow. You know, geopolitically it's getting very interesting. So, you know, being able to have the right team in place, which was the sort of segue to me to talk about the project, but having the right team in place that have been around the resources industry for, you know, some of us, not me, I'm not that old, but some of us for, you know, 40, 45 years have been around the industry. Me, myself, I've been involved in mining industry in Australia and globally now for, you know, 25 years. So it's certainly not new to us. Alan Mulligan, who is our technical director, he's a veteran of the industry. He's been involved in the feasibility studies of ionic clay resource projects similar to Ampass and Dava. So we've certainly got the team in place technically, and I think commercially and financially to move this forward as quickly as we can.
So tell us about this Ampass and Dava project in Madagascar then. It's been the subject of a fair amount of work already, not all of it done by you. You mentioned feasibility studies a moment ago. So there's that, you know, you're quite a long way in with this project, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. When we look at the actual project itself, it has been around for around 20 years. It was initially discovered around 20 years ago. They were looking for hard rock rare earths in the basement or in the hard rock layers of the project. But when they started exploring through that the regolith clay layers, and they discovered that they had ionic clay hosted rare earths. Since that time, they've spent, you know, circa $20 million in the ground, both you know, exploring, drilling, and digging exploration pits out on the site. And the scale of work is actually, it's quite significant. There were over 4,470 individual 10-meter exploration pits dug by hand out at the site, which led us to have this large-scale resource. And when I say large, it's the best part of 700 million tonnes of material that's grading 860 parts per million total rare earth oxides. So it's a significant and large resource that we have out there. Like I said, it's JORC compliant, so it's got a high level of confidence attached to the work that's been done there. And to put that 700 million tonnes into perspective, if we were running at somewhere around 5 million tonnes per annum, you've got well over 100-year mine life at the moment attached to that resource base. So when I say it's large scale, it is quite significant in its extent. Importantly, the ionic clay nature of the resource is very important. It's a very simple, low risk, low technical risk processing flow sheet that we have for these ionic clays, because really you are just effectively washing the material off of the clays. So you're not, you know, crushing and grinding and leaching these things it's not a corrosive sort of heavy mining industry process. It is a simple irrigation leach process. And the recoveries that we see for the magnet metals, the praseodymium, the neodymium, the dysprosiums and the terbiums, which are going into the permanent magnets, are very high. So, you know, they're in the high 80s and high 70s for the very heavy elements, which globally is very high. That's a high recovery rate for those metals. And like I said, really simple process, simple leaching. We're just effectively washing the elements off of the clays with salt water. So it's really quite simple.
So you mentioned the ionic nature of the project there and differentiating it from hard rock projects. As far as I understand it, you'll be the only ionic clay rare earth project listed in London. Is that right?
That's our understanding at the moment. Look, no one's come and told me that I won't be that, and we've said it for a bit now. Look, you're only ever one person's discovery away from not being the only pure play ionic resource company out there. But at this stage, to the best of my knowledge, we're the only purely ionic clay focused company up on the London Exchange. And you know, when we look at the Australian market, there's many. Rare earth companies, the key or the large rare earth companies in Australia are generally related to hard rock. And there's guys that have got, you know, these are companies that need to do drill and blast. They need to do, crushing, grinding, flotation. Then they need to take their processes, they need to take their concentrates to cracking plants. Big capital, intensive industrial processing required. Whereas, you know, when we look at the ionic clays, like I said before, simple leaching and, you know, the ability to stand out in the London market as the pure ionic clay exposure up there, because, you know, from what we've, you know, the research we've done, we're looking at sort of five or six other rare earth focused companies up on that exchange. So we do think it is going to be the go-to opportunity to get exposure to the rare earth market and, you know, the opportunities that that's offering at the moment.
And one of your key people, who I think you mentioned earlier, Mr. Mulligan, has experience of this type of deposit. So it's not the first time that he's handled one of these.
Yeah, correct. Alan recently worked for another company that had an ionic clay deposit in Uganda. So Alan was one of the project engineers and feasibility study engineers that worked on the project for that company. So he's got really relevant, really contemporary knowledge of the processing flow sheets, the way that these ionic clays behave. And Passendale's got a few things on its side, a few beneficial things on its side, in that it's right on the coast of Madagascar. So one of you, I said we were washing the elements off the clays. One of the things that the initial leaching process is effectively salt water, straight out of the ocean as such. So filtered, of course, but the salt water is used in the initial process. And Ampassandava being right on the coast, it's not landlocked 100 k's inside of the country as such. So our major reagent or our major processing input is right on our doorstep. Alan's having been familiar with how these things behave and the location of the project. We'll certainly be able to advance the feasibility study really quickly, given the contemporary knowledge that we have inside the group.
So you mentioned the feasibility study. Tell us, what will the 1.35 million that you're raising now, or you've sort of almost finished raising, but what will that money do for the company and the project on the ground?
Yeah, definitely. The key work stream for us in Madagascar at the moment for Ampassandava is the conversion of the license from an exploitation license to a mining license. From an exploration license to a mining license. So at the moment, it's in transition between the two. It's been applied to have the exploration license converted to a mining license, and to have that process completed, the government wants to see some the fiscal or the financial potential returns that the project has the potential to generate. So to do that, we need to complete the feasibility study. And as I said before, we have spent historically $20 million has been spent on this project. So the geology, the metallurgy, a lot of that work, a lot of that, you know, long lead time, expensive work has been completed. So for us, we move forward, we complete a cost study, a mining study, and a logistics and a capital cost study, which are desktop studies. They're not heavy, they're not heavy on the ground work that needs to be completed. Post-funding, we'll be able to move those forward quite quickly. But the completion of the feasibility study is the key piece of work that we'll continue on with as soon as possible now, so that we can get the financial model for the mine, the mine plan for the mine. We can take that to government and then discuss, you know, royalties, taxes, and any of those sorts of arrangements that need to be agreed with the government before they'll advance your license in Madagascar. And look, just on that, just quickly, we have seen over the last 6 months significant movement up in Madagascar with other companies. There's some mineral sands miner has been given their license and their approval to continue works. Another graphite focus group has recently received their license as well and is moving forward as quickly as possible. So the government has been working with the World Bank on its mining code. The World Bank and the government now want to see that put into action. They want to see royalties, taxes, and the advancement of the industry in country now. We think our timing is looking quite good now to have really meaningful, constructive conversations with the government and have this license converted quickly.
And so what is the schedule for the feasibility study? When do you think that will be ready?
So the things we can control, which are the study work, we think that, you know, in sort of, you know, 6 months we can have a lot of that work completed. We won't put a, you know, specific date on there, but, you know, 6 to 9 months you would like to think we could get that work completed. From there we go into the government's time frame, so we don't have as much control over that. But look, if we got a fair run, we do think that this project could be up and running, into development within a sort of 2-year period. But like I said, we do need to caveat that by saying we can't control the government's time frame, how long it takes to engage and have the license converted and then be moving forward with developing on ground is really, you know, will be in their hands in that regard. But we would hope that the early work that we've done and the engagement that we've done to date will put us in a good position to advance that as quickly as possible.
So do you have any back of the envelope numbers at this point which you can share with the audience? I mean, not necessarily specifics, but sort of generalizations. You've obviously seen something attractive about this project which makes you think it will make a lot of money. What more can you say about that sort of general statement?
It's a difficult question to answer when you're in the middle of a prospectus and preparing the feasibility study, or, you know, preparing to complete feasibility study costings and models. But one thing we do know is that the process itself, being, you know, a simple leaching process where we're free digging clays, so there's no drill and blast here. You're free digging clays, you're hauling it to a centralized leach pad. You're pumping solutions and fluids through relatively small heap leach, batches, and getting high recoveries of material. The process itself has got a low cost feel to it, just given the low technology risk that you've got attached to the flow sheet, and high recovery says that your yield is going to be good. So as long as you can get a line of sight on, you know, the rare earth pricing, which is probably a more important conversation as you head forward into the next few years, we'll have a pretty good idea of cost and capital costs, because there's no big build here as such. Most of the equipment that we'll be buying is containerized equipment that is sort of plug and play once it's out onto the site. So look, we do have a line of sight on what we think that would look like. It's probably not something that we can talk about publicly at this stage, given the work needs to be done. It'd be very risky for us to be putting, putting numbers out there at the moment on those. I think it'd be a little bit reckless, so we won't do that. But we certainly believe we'll have a low cost, low capex compared to our peers operation as we move forward. And when we look at the rare earth market at the moment, we see a lot of, I guess, geopolitical rumblings, whether it's Donald Trump talking about Greenland or trying to secure Ukraine's rare earths heading forward. We do think the pricing is going to be impacted by that geopolitical influence that we're seeing now, because China still dominates rare earth production, refining, outturning 90% of the world's rare earth materials. The US, Europe, Australia even are looking at where their defensive industries and their military applications are going to source their rare earths from, because they've identified that it's obviously a risk having a centralized single country of origin for those types of materials. So we do think that prices will have to respond. And look, the demand outlook is very strong as we head forward as well, given robotics, AI, military applications, like I touched on, wind farms, the permanent magnets in wind farm generators. All of these applications are showing really strong demand growth heading forward. So as we head forward, into the back end of this decade, we certainly think that the prices will have to respond as supply starts to dry up as the demand increases.
So will you be doing any offtake agreements?
Yes, yeah, definitely. We've already had interest come through, and we've managed to execute a non-binding term sheet with a company called United Rare Earths out of the US. So they're a Tennessee-based rare earths recycler. They will be moving into separation activities and also refining activities of rare earths at the site that they've secured in Tennessee. Look, they are a private company. Their goal is independent supply of rare earths back into the US. They are also connected with the Oakfield Laboratories, which is the US, the largest laboratory out of the US that's attached to the Department of Energy. So they are linked back to the government as well at the moment. So they looked at Ampass and Darwa. They're looking at where over the next years they'll be able to source their rare earth concentrates and carbonates from to go into their processes. And executed that agreement with us. Obviously, from here on, we need to move to product qualifications and get sample products to them and the likes. So there's a bit of work before it will be a binding agreement as such. But knowing now that there's already interest coming out of the US for products like Ampass and Darwa's, which is a nice high-grade concentrate, high-grade carbonate product, sorry, those high-grade carbonate products, low impurities. So it'll be, we think, well sought in the market as we head forward, because other people bring different elements with them, whereas Ampass and Darwa being nice and clean and of a high grade nature, sort of 60% of the valuable minerals in that carbonate, we do think it'll be well bid heading forward. The United Rare Earths term sheet does talk to about a 5-year contract with the potential to extend for another 5 years. The rare earth pricing is linked to a basket of price points. There's take or pay type terminology that's attached to that term sheet as well. So as we head forward and as we start to actually get our work done on the ground and can provide sample product, that's when you can go out and find binding offtake agreements for the material. That said, United Rare Earths is fantastic, and we hope that they'll turn into be a great partner heading forward. But we've also had conversations with other groups, look globally. I wouldn't put it, it's not any particular jurisdiction, but we've had conversations globally with different potential offtake parties as well, because United Rare Earths are only circa 50% of our product. So we've maintained our ability to go on market the remaining 50% as we head forward.
Yeah, interesting times. It would have been tough to predict 10 or 20 years ago that a US president would be talking about rare earths, but that is the case these days. So we look forward to your listing and we wish you all the best with it. Thanks very much for talking us through all that today, Joe Belladonna.
Okay, thanks for your time, Alistair.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We carry the largest in-stock selection of Hunter ceiling fans. They provide consistent comfort all year round and also help reduce energy costs. Right now, save big on Hunter ceiling fans when you shop at Menards. View our entire selection of Hunter ceiling fans today on Menards.com. Plus, our weekly flyer with plenty more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.